All right. We are back here at the Tamar Yonah Show. After the beautiful weekend, the weather was cooling down here in the land of Israel, and it is just fantastic being here. Also, it's Sunday, and this is a day that the government has lifted much of the restrictions of the lockdown that we are under on the second wave of the coronavirus. And that's what we're going to be talking about in the show today, because on the one hand, you don't want to get sick. You want to save lives. You don't want this pandemic to spread. On the other hand, with the lockdowns, the economy is crashing. People are losing their businesses, their livelihoods, their jobs. People are getting depressed. People are locked in their homes. There could be spousal abuse because of people being too close in proximity for too long. And what do we do? Where do our rights come in, and where does our health and protection of our health come in? And is there such a thing? Well, today I imagine that the show is going to be extremely controversial. In fact, another show that I did last week was banned from YouTube because we talked about hydroxychloroquine and how that could help patients perhaps in the first few days of getting the coronavirus and have to maybe not end up in the hospital. I'm not going to go into the details there. You can go listen to the show. It's still on our website, although it was banned and censored and taken off of YouTube. I dare think that this show is going to be going up on YouTube, or it's staying up there if we do put it up there. In any case, I encourage you to listen to the show, to share it, and to, I have to put this disclaimer in, to speak with your own doctor, perhaps even your own lawyer, on what you should do with some of the things that we're discussing on the show today. Ultimately, it is up to you. We all have to be responsible and take responsibility for the decisions that we make. So it is up to you what to take from this show or what to leave, or if anything. And we invite you to call into the show as well and join us on the air with any questions that you might have or a brief comment. We want to hear from you also. We are open. We want to explore both sides of the argument. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. All right. Is the government stealing your rights through the coronavirus? This is probably, I imagine, going to be a very controversial show. You're invited to call in and weigh in on the issue or make a brief comment if you like. If you have any questions for our guest, I'm sure he'll be happy to answer your questions. I know that I have a lot, and I will be a bit playing devil's advocate during the show because I want to be able to present both sides of the argument. And feel free to join in on the show on the air with us and be able to do that as well. So we've come to a place in history where the entire world pretty much is under a pandemic that has been deadly. Granted, not as deadly as other pandemics that have gone around the world, but people are afraid. With the constant news, constant social media, constant videos going out of people who have the virus, who say how painful it is or tell horror stories about it, and it's very, very frightening. On the other hand, we are also under lockdowns. We cannot go to work. We cannot go to school. And this has hit the economy very, very hard around the world, putting some people out of business, people who are not able to support themselves and their families. So where is the line drawn? Where do we say, no, I'll take care of my own health and let me be? Our guest today is Rabbi Yitzhak David Smith. He's a rabbi, as I said, a lawyer, and has studied molecular biology, virology, and infectious diseases at the University of California at Berkeley. Recently, videos of his focusing on the coronavirus and the government's handling of it have gone viral. His stance is that public health officials are bullying its population by deciding who is essential, who is allowed to work and make a living, who has to be on lockdown, and even if people can pray from whatever religion in their place of worship, and even deciding who can go and buy food and who can go and visit their family members who are in the hospital, of which many patients had to die alone. On this show, as I said, we're going to try to bring you both sides of the argument regarding lockdowns and restrictions, and feel free to help me do that by calling into the show. Our numbers are on the top of our homepage at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. So welcome to the show, Rabbi Yitzhak David Smith.
Well, thank you. Thank you for being here, and thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be with people that love Hashem, love Am Yisrael, and love Eretz Yisrael.
Amen, amen. And, you know, your videos have been going viral. I've been getting it from all sides, people telling me you must interview him, and I had to go on the hunt and how to contact you. And here you are on the show. And I want you, because you are very prolific, you're very clear and concise in the way that you can talk and pass on the information in a very easy way for all of us to understand of what exactly society is going through today. You know, they say that in the times of the Messianic era, there's going to be times of confusion. And I think that a lot of people today are confused. You know, where does the government's power start and stop in, quote unquote, trying to protect us and then our personal rights? So where would you like to start?
Well, I want to start on a good note, which is, like you said, you know, times of the Messianic era, we do have times of confusion, and the old way of the way things worked, the way we thought everything was just so comfortable, is definitely something that's you could see. It's a tremendous upheaval, and we know that there's going to be a battle of Moloch is going to make its final gasp and try to dissuade the Jewish people from going to the Geula and dissuade the world from going to the Geula.
So Geula is redemption. Like, can you translate all redemption of your Hebrew words?
Oh, okay. Sure, 100%. 100%. The nation of Amalek is going to try to dissuade the Jewish people from going to the redemption. And this is really important to remember. Like, when we look and see what's going on around us, we can understand what the prophets talked about. We never imagined a time when the entire world could be controlled, really, at the push of a button, where all the nations in the world are working in lockstep. Each one is working at different, you know, degrees of efficiency or meeting different resistance in terms of reaching their final, I will talk about what that means, whether final goals or final solutions. But the actual facts are that we see that the whole world is in the same boat. There's nowhere to run today. And that's just a fascinating reality to see that unfolding in front of us. We have to see the positive in that. In terms of what's going on right now, we are really experiencing, we're bearing the brunt of what's called the public health war. The public health war is, public health is, to start with, is a concept that is not about health, and it's not about you, and it's not about me or anyone else. It's about a general statistical standard of who's healthy and who's not healthy that's made arbitrarily by bureaucrats. This idea has been around for eternity. In Sparta, they took the disabled kids and they let them die in the fields outside the walls of the city because they were not healthy enough to meet the standards. Today, you have in Iceland, you have forcible abortions for children that test positive for Down syndrome and so forth. You have elimination of the elderly going on through physician-assisted suicide. These are all concepts in public health. And the concept of public health is that they're going to ration the health system for those that are the healthiest and most valuable and essential to society. So this is completely opposite of Torah, because Torah is about a concept of Yirapa, which means God is going to heal us. I, the Lord, am your God. And there's permission given to a doctor who is a person who knows that healing comes from God, who wants to heal people, who knows the patient personally, and knows the disease. That is a reifa, that is a doctor in Torah. A person who makes pronouncements for other people what they should do is not a doctor. A person who doesn't see patients is not a doctor, according to Torah. It's not a health professional, because in Torah there's no requirement for a particular licensing. It's, do you meet those four requirements? So what we're facing is, and what we see when we see the video footage in Australia, in Israel, in the United States now starting more and more, and in England, of the brutality of the police and the brutality of the public health enforcers, this is totally makes sense. It's not shocking at all. It's shocking from a human perspective to watch it, but it completely makes sense because that's what public health is. They will destroy the individual in order to meet some state or utilitarian larger objective. And that's what we're facing right now. It's the individual against the public health tyranny.
So do you think that the government has an alternative motive? I mean, do you connect this with what some people call them conspiracy theorists, or just people who are arguing the other side? They're saying that there's a move towards a one world government. And in order to make this one world government, these separate nation members of the UN have to implement what the World Health Organization says. And this is all in order to be able to erode national rights and be able to easily take over populations. Is that where your stance is?
You know, the first thing to realize is, what is a conspiracy? A conspiracy is a secret criminal plot. And if you've read my 15-page letter that's available at saveourfreedoms.org, you will see that I only base my information on completely public information and on the statements of the governors and the World Health Organization. There's nothing secret about what they're doing. This is not a conspiracy. It is totally 100% in the open. They've declared objectives of sustainability, which means managing the world population growth and the actual world population, which is not a new concept. You can go back, like I said, to Sparta, to the times of Nimrod, who regulated the birth of children in order to protect his power. To the times of Thomas Malthus in the late 1700s and 1800s, an Anglican minister from England who wrote that the world population was too large, the world could not sustain it, and therefore it was necessary to reduce the world population through war and suffering and through starvation. And we saw that implemented by the Nazis and the communists, both in Russia and in China and other countries in the world, where they instituted one-child policies, two-child policies. They murdered, Stalin murdered 3 to 12 million Ukrainians, and many more. The estimates are like 500 million human beings were eliminated over the last century at the hands of this ideology that the world cannot sustain its population. That's the cult of scarcity. That's fear-driven, that there's not enough. And that comes directly in opposition to what we believe in, which is the God of abundance, that God will provide for every single child that's born. He'll provide for all of humanity. And we see the fulfillment of that. You mentioned the redemption at the beginning. We see the fulfillment that in this world right now, there's enough food for everybody. There's enough food, some say, in the United States to feed the entire world. But through systemic and systematic attempts to disrupt that flow of food, and now to break the entire food production in the world and the food distribution of the world through the testing of people and closing people down and locking down, it throws the whole world into starvation and suffering.
I need to ask you this question. So if that's the case, that the government wants to do things like euthanasia, they want to take away the weak people, wouldn't it be in their interest on that argument that they let this pandemic proliferate and the older people who are more prone to die from this would die? It would save money for paying them out Social Security. It takes away the weak and more money for the government and less people on the planet.
That is a great counter argument to make. And the fact of the matter is, I think that if you look at the number of people that died in the hospitals and the elderly people that died in the hospital, they died in far unnecessarily, meaning to say coronavirus, even in the very what you'd call susceptible populations, people over 90, over 80 and so forth, the rate of the death rate is low compared to the number of people that died through being neglected in the hospital, starvation, morphine drips, not getting fluids.
Okay, hold. Sorry, I have to interrupt you.
The elimination process of what happened.
Hold it right there. We're going to a break. I'm so sorry.
Of course, coming to Israel.
All right. right. We are back here at the Tamar Yonah Show on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. And our guest is Rabbi Yitzhak David Smith. He is a lawyer. He's a rabbi, as I said, and he's also studied molecular biology, virology, and infectious diseases at the University of California at Berkeley. And he has been coming out and making videos and writing articles that have been going viral now at this time when the world, many of us, are under lockdown or under threat of lockdown, and it is destroying people's livelihood, it is destroying businesses, it is destroying world economies, and it is taking away our rights. At the same time, people want to be safe, and they don't want to get these diseases. So if we have the rabbi still with us, you were saying that a lot of the deaths attributed to coronavirus were from hospitals in, I remember reading about the news in the tri-state area, how they were just stopped feeding people by in infusion, is that how you say it, and declining giving them water, and they died from basically starvation. What else did you want to do to follow up on that question?
Well, I think one of the follow-up questions, well, you know, people say, well, what about the doctors and so forth? And the fact of the matter is, over the last 40 years, the Hippocratic Oath, which is a non-Jewish oath that was obviously brought down about 2,000 years ago, actually longer than 2,000 years ago, maybe 25, 2,600 years ago. But the interesting thing was that there was obviously a debate at that time, what's the role of a doctor, and can a doctor aid a patient in dying and help kill the patient through poisoning them? And the Hippocratic Oath says no. It's the second substantive statement in the Hippocratic Oath says doctors cannot assist the patient in killing themselves. And the third statement says doctors cannot assist their patients in having an abortion. Those two lines have been taken out of the Hippocratic Oath. And not only has the Hippocratic Oath been eviscerated in that way, but they've actually eliminated it from most medical schools in the United States of America over the last 40 years. So the doctors that we imagine that are doing no harm are, that's a doctor of the past. The doctor today is trained, and I have this testimony from clients of mine, that doctors are now trained that there is a limit to what medicine is willing to do and what the system is willing to do to save a person. And so it is considered an advantage for society as a whole to eliminate these people. And this is the training of doctors. And we saw so many doctors and nurses on Facebook and so forth crying about what's going on in the hospitals. It's a new training system. It's a training system, an attitude of public health. And that is really the grave danger. People are not awake to it. They don't understand what's going on.
What about the people who are saying that we're all in the same boat, and though one person doesn't want to wear a mask, and they don't want to have to keep social distancing, and they don't want to comply to what the government's demands are, and they're saying, look, you want to do it, you do it, but I'm drilling a hole in where I'm sitting, and they're saying, wait a second, we're all in the same boat. What do you have to say about that?
Well, no one's drilling a hole in the boat. First of all, that's a lot of presumptions there that, in fact, this is actually deadly to the people that are around the person, that this is something that's going to be prevented by the measures that they're taking, that the damages caused by this are by these lockdowns and by these social distancings are less than the danger of coronavirus. You have elderly people that are abandoned, left alone, despondent. There's tremendous destruction going on in the world right now. And for someone to arrogantly say that they've identified that this one issue of coronavirus is the only issue that they're going to take into account is complete and utter falsehood. And it doesn't matter how big their credentials are or how big their rabbinical degree is. If anyone says that, it's a complete abdication of responsibility. Our job is, as a rabbi and as a human being, is to look at the entire picture. That's number one. And you have to look at the economic effect. You have to look at the social effect. And you can't just say, oh, we have to guard our souls, which, by the way, does not refer on the simple meaning of the verse in the Torah to the body. It refers to the soul and staying away from foreign ideologies. You cannot just go and use that and say, okay, we're going to run roughshod over anyone who disagrees with us, because that running roughshod over anyone who disagrees with us, that is the concept of communism, Marxism, socialism. The cult of scarcity says because there's not enough, we must crush everybody. That's what communism is. This is basically an invitation to world tyranny. The public health tyranny is the excuse. But anyone who's so short-sighted is to say that because so-and-so is not wearing a mask, we should compel him and force him They are eradicating the independent thinkers. They are eradicating the people who are willing to actually exercise their rights to breathe and to walk around with their tzelem elokim, their divine image on their face revealed, and to be able to interact with people and see the emotional connection between human beings that comes through seeing people face to face. These people who are now making declarations are destructive of humanity. They are the danger.
We do have a caller. We have joining us James from the occupied territories of Ohio. Hi there, James. What's your comment or question for Rabbi David? Did we lose him? Okay, I guess we lost him. All right. So, so you're basically saying that the government is putting us under lockdown, taking away our rights when there is no justification for it. Am I correct so far?
That's correct. And if I can make one point over here, I think it's really important. I know we have to go another break shortly, but people talk about taking away rights, and people make mistaken ideas that the rights are granted to us by the United States Constitution. The incredible thing about the Declaration of Independence in the United States and the Constitution of the United States is that it does not actually grant any rights to anybody. What the people who were inspired to found the country of the United States and inspire the rest of the world recognize is that the rights are granted to man by God. They cannot be taken away by anybody, and a person cannot surrender them. So there's no rights that are granted by any document. It's granted by God Almighty, and it applies to everybody in the world. Even if you live in a country that does not have the United States Constitution or the Declaration of Independence, you still have these same rights, and no one can take them away from you. They can restrict your ability to exercise those rights, but no one could ever take them away from you. And that we have to emphasize that to people so they can develop the spiritual backbone to exercise their rights in the face of the violence and the terror that's being used to get them to submit.
Okay, let me give you this scenario, this argument, just to try to keep a little bit of balance here. There are people who are saying, wait a second, I am worried about my health. I do not want to get the coronavirus. I've heard stories where people still have after effects from it. Sometimes, you know, they don't even know how long it'll stay, the damage that they've had. And they're saying, if you don't have the lockdowns, then I'm going to be forced to go to work, or they'll fire me. So if everyone's under lockdown, number one, I'll be safe. And number two, I won't lose my job, because if you lift the lockdown, they'll say, come to work. And I say, I'm afraid to come to work. I mean, I've heard that there were teachers who are afraid to go to teach back in school because they are afraid they're going to get sick. So what about that argument? People saying, listen, this is a life and death situation, or at least I believe it is. And I don't want to have to be forced to go back to work.
If you don't want to work, that's your decision between you and yourself and your creator. But you cannot force everyone else to stop working also. The fact is that you brought up teachers. There was a big publicized story of an Israeli lady who was a young teacher, and she died allegedly of coronavirus. The family says she had nothing to do with coronavirus. She didn't die from coronavirus. There's another. Many of these stories are being foisted on people. In New Jersey, there's a well-known doctor that died of coronavirus, allegedly. The wife says he was killed by the hospital. So we have all these fears going around in our heads that are being used to justify tyranny and the destruction of other people's lives. If you're afraid, I'm so sorry that you're afraid. Let me hold your hand. Let me reassure you that there's a lot of reasons not to be afraid. If you still can't convince yourself or get let go of these fear mongering, then go ahead and try to work remotely. Go ahead and wear a mask. You could wear two masks if you want. If you want to stay away from your grandparents and from your grandchildren, I'm sorry, that sounds very sad and it's tragic. But if you want to do that, but don't go tell other people what to do. That is the fundamental concept of tyranny. And public health, by the way, is the most effective way to get people to agree to tyranny, because everyone's scared. And then everyone has this argument. Well, we've got to force everyone, because if we don't, then we're all going to die. Well, that's what the United States Constitution sought to prevent, that there would be never a circumstance where government would or one group of people could rule over others because of some fear. That's the whole point.
Okay, we do have a caller, but very quickly, I just want to make this clear. So are you stating that the majority of the deaths of COVID are done by the hospital, not by the virus itself?
The majority of deaths of coronavirus are done by mislabeling people sick with other diseases as coronavirus patients, by terrorizing people into thinking they have an incurable disease that has no treatment, by not giving people proper treatments in advance, by not encouraging people to take care of their health so that they are robust and healthy and not susceptible to getting chest congestion and other symptoms that are identified with coronavirus, which are very often very similar to the flu. Basic taking care of yourself is what's necessary. Going and seeing other people is a very important thing, and that's being denied to people. Advocates in the hospitals being denied to the people.
Okay.
Human contact is being denied to people. That's what's killing people.
Okay, let me stop you there because we're going to a break. I'm going to ask the caller to come on and just ask his question. Again, it is James from Ohio. Ask your question, and we'll try to get to it when we get back from the break. Go ahead, James. James, you only have a few seconds. Did we lose him? I guess we lost James again. All right. All right. So, no problem. We're going to a break now anyway in just a minute. So to go over these things, I just want to state my, in case anyone is interested in how I'm feeling about this since I'm hosting the show, I want to say that the first lockdown that we had, I was all for. I did not know anything about corona. Neither did anybody else, pretty much. I really felt like the prime minister was trying to protect us. And it is a fact that when we're under lockdown, the rate of infection doesn't spread so quickly and it goes down. That is true. The question is whether it goes over our rights or not. But now during the second time, and I've seen what the first lockdown did to people and did to countries and did to the society and to the population, I am under the opinion at this time that people that are afraid, like me, older people, people who have pre-existing conditions, we should stay home but let everyone else get on with their lives. We'll be right back. All right, we are back here at the Tamar Yonah Show on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. Our guest is Rabbi Yitzhak David Smith. He is a rabbi, a lawyer, and has studied molecular biology, virology, and infectious diseases. And he is here talking to us about the coronavirus and how the government has used this in order to put us under lockdown under the umbrella of they're trying to protect us. And I believe some of that. On the other hand, there are some questions that need to be asked. And I just want to, before I bring the rabbi back on, I just want to say we did another show on this topic last week called The Big Lie. And it was talking about how hydroxychloroquine was taken off the market when it's been proven by countries like Italy, where it has helped people within the first 5 days of getting corona. When they take that with zinc and vitamin D and perhaps some other recipe, it has been proven to have them avoid having to go to the hospital in the first place and has seen wonderful success. And yet, not only has it been taken off the market, it's so hard to get today. This video was banned and was taken off of YouTube. YouTube sent a letter to the station saying that it has been taken off because it doesn't comply to their rules. So this is something. Why not have an open discussion about this, especially when there are doctors who have medical degrees, right? They're doctors who are saying that in their experience this has helped, and then all of a sudden a drug that was so called safe on the market for decades, sold over the counter, all of a sudden is unavailable in a time when there is a worldwide pandemic. That question has to be asked. All right. So, Rabbi, we were talking before about you were saying that the governments have no right to, under the guise of so-called public health, to lock us down. And there was a video that you did that was in front of the Capitol building in New Jersey, where you gave a speech to the public, and I wanted to know if you can tell our listeners exactly what you said briefly, and then also what the reaction was to that, because I know the video has gone viral, but what about the people who are actually there listening to you?
Well, that speech was extremely well received, and what I focused on was Torah. I was speaking to 2,500 people, mostly non-Jewish people, and explaining to them that Torah, we don't call it the Old Testament because there's nothing old about it. It is a living gift from God at every moment, and that the concept is God is the God of abundance, and we do not want to give in to the cult of scarcity. once you understand it's the war of God of abundance versus the cult of scarcity, it answers all the questions. You asked about hydroxychloroquine. I'll just take a detour for 1 second. A moment ago, why are they suppressing hydroxychloroquine? Because the cult of scarcity is all about creating fear and scarcity. Whether it's shortages in food, whether it's telling you you can't shouldn't have so many kids because it's going to cost you so much in tuition, or all the different ideas of scarcity. There's not enough oxygen. There's not enough air. There's not enough water. There's not enough space for people. Not enough love to go around. There's not enough time. There's not enough money. This is all cult of scarcity talk, and it comes in so many forms. Now, that's what I talked about, and it was extremely well received. I also spoke directly to the state troopers that were there, providing the security to the buildings, and brought to their attention that they should not participate in any of these orders that are against the Constitution of the United States. They should not participate in any orders that are shutting down synagogues and yeshivas, because the world depends on the synagogues and depends on the yeshivas. And I educated the audience that when we go to the synagogue on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, we are praying for the welfare of the entire humanity. When we go to the synagogue on Sukkot, on the Feast of the Tabernacles, we are praying to God that there should be rain for all of humanity, all of the crops are in the world. We're bringing those down from the God of abundance for all of humanity. So a police officer needs to know why would he want to be involved in shutting that down? We want to reach every single law enforcement officer in the world and tell them, you are working against your own best interests. You're working against the best interests of your family by clamping down on people serving God. And this was very, very well received, because it's just going straight to the heart of the issue over here. We need to speak to every human being and recognize that they're all on our side. There's 8 billion human beings. God bless them all, and they should increase and multiply. And we're all on the same side here. We just need to get the message out to them, point them in the direction of God Almighty. Let them know there's nothing to be afraid of. And there's nothing that they can be taken away from them. They can voluntarily surrender and agree to be pushed around and agree to be bullied and agree to be locked in their houses. But if 8 billion human beings right now walk into the streets, take off their masks, and live their lives like a human being's meant to live, all this public health tyranny will collapse in an instant.
But a lot more people will be getting sick, because whether we like it or not, this is an extremely contagious virus, much more so than the regular flu that we're used to every year.
First of all, it's not at all clear that at all. In fact, for most portions of the population, it's less dangerous than the flu. And even for the people that are in a very, very limited band of people, there's measures that can be taken for their own benefit with their consent, meaning to say, I'm not advocating locking up 80-year-olds either. But 80-year-olds can be taught that this is something that can be beaten. There is no death sentence from coronavirus. That is falsehood. It's false information being put out to sow fear and terror. We need to break through that.
Is that your opinion, or you have stats to prove that? From what I understand, I'm trying to be open on both sides here to accept information, is that there are people dying, tens of thousands of people, if not more, around the world, and we do have to be careful, and that the difference between this virus and the others is that it is so much more easily contagious.
The numbers that are used to show this increase in contagiousness are not clear that they actually represent an increase in contagion, because you have situations, you have people to get together, they have large gatherings, they are exhausted, they have a lot of things are revolved around drinking parties and so forth. That is a natural experience for the suppression of the immune system when a person is susceptible to disease. There's no evidence that people just walking in the streets or people working together or even people in the same family, there's people in the same families that are not getting it from other family members. If you actually look at the numbers, the Centers for Disease Control released statistics based on numbers of people presenting symptoms there are two groups they called. The one was the coronavirus positive group and the coronavirus negative group, which they called the control group. About 300 plus people were in this bunch of health centers around the country. And the amazing thing was that 70% of the people who had the coronavirus, with symptoms with coronavirus, were what they called always mask wearers. And it's 74% of the people who had the same symptoms but did not have coronavirus positive tests were also always mask wearers. So we are being fed all kinds of information about how masks work and how deadly it is and how you're going to get this thing if you don't wear masks. It's simply not true. And in addition, you want to go back to real virology and not fear, Koch postulates require you to show that a disease-causing agent, if you want to allege that something causes a disease, you have to show that it appears in every case of that disease. And the corollary is that every case of that disease must have the disease-causing agent present. If it doesn't meet those two requirements, it fails as saying it is the cause. From their own study, if you look at it right on its face, it says clearly that they had 300 people, 300 plus people, all with the same symptoms, and less than 50% of them had coronavirus. So there's, it fails Koch's postulates to say that the symptoms are caused by coronavirus, or that the disease they have is caused by this virus. This is real science. Look at the information. You have to look at the, you cannot read newspaper articles, cannot listen to talk show hosts, and with all due respect to you as a talk show host, but you have to go you have to go to the original sources, read the original papers, and you will see that actually there's evidence to suggest lockdowns don't work. There's evidence to say that
I have to stop you there. What evidence? Because we've seen here, at least here in Israel, that the rates of people since the lockdown has gone down dramatically, and that's why the government here says that they're releasing us from the lockdown, although there'll still be some restrictions. And they say, however, if it gets up again above an unacceptable amount that they feel the hospitals will not be able to cope with it, they're going to reapply restrictions on us. But it does work. And we know anyway from any flu that if you wash your hands, if you don't breathe in people's coughs and sneezes, today we're wearing a mask against that, but if you keep social distancing, these things do help us not contract any flu, including the corona.
Common sense, the code of Jewish law says that after you touch money, you should wash your hands, because there are certain common sense everyday precautions. We wash our hands after we use the restroom. We wash our hands before we eat food. These are common sense things. They do not require any new measures at all.
Oh, okay. But especially during flu season, wouldn't you tell your kids, wash your hands, don't rub your nose on your sleeve, you know, all of these things. And I mean, we learn from plagues in history that the Jews didn't get these plagues because we washed, when the Gentile population in the cities, they didn't wash because they didn't know about germs. But the Jewish people, you know, from time immemorial were washing, and this is why we didn't get the plagues. And that's why they called us devils, that the Jews were the ones who started this, because look, they're not sick, we are.
Well, I think you just proved my point. We have the resources in our basic everyday life to be able to avoid these spread of disease. We do not need extra measures. It's okay. Already built into our lifestyle.
All right. So I'm going to stop you there, because you know what? We're going to go for another hour. We're going to do this special because I really want to get into this and understand more. And I'm sure that you all do too, who are listening. When we get back from for the second hour, I'm going to ask him about corona testing and why he believes that this is a trap. We'll be right back.
Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. Did you know this psalm and many others were composed by a Jewish shepherd and musician who later became a king? Would you like to know some of the inner meanings of psalms to help you connect with God and strengthen your soul? An exciting and easy to read book is now available, which will help you do just that. Software for the Soul, Psalms for Everyone, available on Kindle, Audible, and Amazon.com. Software for the Soul.
The world is in the midst of a pandemic, and it has killed tens of thousands of people. Our guest today is saying that the government is not handling this well. We can't go to our places of worship. Kids can't go to school in many areas. Maybe you can't even go out to make a living. And the government is deciding who is essential and who is not essential and what is necessary for you and what is not necessary for you to do. So we're here talking about all of this. We're going to try to tackle both sides of the issue. We invite you to join us on the air as well. Our numbers are on the top of our homepage at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. You can call into the show and you can join us on the air to rebuttal, to agree, disagree, whatever you like. Our guest is Rabbi Yitzhak David Smith. This is our second hour. I decided we have to talk a little bit more about this because I want to get some things straightened out. And Rabbi, with the minute and a half that we have, what would you like to open up with?
Well, the key thing over here is to keep fear away from our experience. We have to remember, by the way, that just like it's wrong to be afraid of coronavirus, it's wrong to be afraid of this tyranny. We have to learn that God is really running the world. He will take care of our health, and he's also going to take care of us. But in both cases, we have to take the right action. And the right action is making sure we're thinking independently, educating ourselves about our health, educating ourselves about our rights, and then taking action that's 100% in alignment with our own best interests. And that's what brings the best for all of us together.
You had said that, you know, we should have to remember that God runs the world, and we learn in Judaism that whenever we get decreed a plague upon us, it's because that we have sinned, and it's a punishment.
The plague here is public health. And it is a spiritual cause to that, because we have given up our independent thinking, our ability to evaluate things for ourselves, and given our lives over to experts. That is the plague.
All right. Well, you see, we're giving you both sides here. Feel free to call in and join us on the air if you want to weigh in on the issue, if you have a comment or a question. We are here live if you're listening on Sunday afternoon here in Israel, holy time, for 4 to 6 p.m. Or if it's between 9 to 11 a.m. U.S. Eastern time, it means that we are live and you can join us on the air with any comments or questions. We'll be right back. Right. We are back here at the Tamar Yonah Show on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com, and we're talking about the coronavirus and the government's handling of it. Are they right to, quote unquote, protect us by taking away our rights, or are they wrong? Our guest says that they have no right to take away our rights, that it's not their privilege to do so, that at least in the United States, according to the Constitution, it's unlawful. And around the world as well, people have inalienable rights that are given to us by God, and that governments have no right to take that away from us. And that includes our worship, our ability to be able to make a living, etc., etc. Our guest is Rabbi Yitzhak David Smith. He is a rabbi, as I said, a lawyer, and he has studied molecular biology, virology, and infectious diseases. And he has come out with some videos that have gone viral on the social media where he's talking about how the government has no right to demand that people wear masks, not go to their place of worship to be able to pray, not be able to go to work, and have the government deem who is essential and who isn't. Now, I have to admit that these are worrying things. I worry about them myself. On the other side of the coin, there are people, and I tend to agree with them as well. You know, with the Jewish joke about the judge. You know that. You must know that joke, Rabbi, about the guy who gives his testimony to the judge, and the judge says, "You're right." And then the plaintiff says, "Wait a second, you didn't hear my side." And he tells his story, and the judge says, "You know what? You're right, too." And then the judge's wife says, "They can't both be right." And he says, "You're right, too." So that's kind of like where we are right now. Okay. So they're saying that, you know, this is a virus. It is contagious. We have to wash our hands. We have to keep social distancing. We have to wear masks until we have gotten to be able to eradicate this enough that we can go on back to normal life. Now, there are a lot of people who are very scared to get this virus, and I'm scared myself. But a lot of them are going in for tests. for a corona test. And I know that you have written some things where you say that it is very, you're saying, this is your opinion, that it is very dangerous to do so because if you take the test, you're in their system, et cetera, et cetera. I'd like you to expound on that if you can.
You know, Dr. Amir Shachar from Lanieto Hospital in Netanya, Israel, says that the real plague we have right now is the plague of the testing. All these uptick in cases are just the result of testing. Whether the tests are accurate or not, and whether the PCR test is the appropriate test for this, or whether any of the other tests work, the answer is that testing is a terrible idea. And because it's part of the trap. You see, everyone's presenting this to you that you should test because you might be carrying this virus, maybe you got it from somebody else, and the answer is it has nothing to do with that. They want you tested every week, and that's what we're moving to right now in New York City, in New Jersey, in other countries. Everyone is going to be tested every week. Now, this is not only a mere inconvenience, but what does it really mean to be tested every week? A person is required, and I've seen now apps that are being used in Jewish schools in New York where the child and the parents are required to affirm their health, that they are not ill. They are getting temporary passes based on their negative test results to be able to enter school and enter other buildings. It is an entire new system that has nothing to do with the world that we lived in before, where you have to prove your health to be, have access to basic things like food, schooling, courthouses, anything. Now, the problem is not only that, that's right there. We could stop the discussion right there with the testing. No, we do not agree to be tested. We do not agree to be graded according to our health. I do not affirm my health. Affirmation is a religious experience that you do instead of swearing. You affirm something. It's a commitment to a higher authority. There is no higher authority in our world called public health. So we're not affirming to our health, and we're not taking tests. Now, what's wrong with tests in addition is that once you get tested, they do contact tracing. Now you have to turn over all your friends and family that you had contact with, and the end result is they come and they contact those people and tell them, even though they're 100% healthy, that they must quarantine also. That's never been done in the history of the world that healthy people were quarantined. There's no basis for this whatsoever. Now,
wouldn't the basis be to spread the disease?
What disease does the person have? You don't even know. They're quarantining people that are completely healthy. No, there's no such idea. This is the lie of public health, that there's something out there so scary that it justifies telling a person you have to stay in your house for 2 weeks because we have decided that you can't go out because you might be spreading a disease. In Torah, there's a concept of a threat to life, a danger. There has to be, in order to reach the category of pekuach nefesh or sakana, there has to be what's called a bari. A bari means an absolutely certain situation as opposed to something that's just a possibility. You have to start with an absolutely certain situation, and then you could have maybe a doubt on top of that called a suffix or sveik sveika, a doubt on a doubt. But you have to start with an absolutely certain situation. You can't say a whole series of maybes. Maybe this person's infected. Maybe this person's contagious. Maybe he'll go to this person. Maybe he'll pass it on to someone else. Maybe he'll go to his grandmother. And maybe the grandmother will die of that cause as opposed to the other ways that she could have got the same virus. That is just pure 100% nonsense, and it has to be called up for what it is. Now, what happens is when they do contact tracing, now in New York City, they are coming to people's doors and saying, where are your children? Because your children can't be exposed to coronavirus. They're coming to the door, knocking on the door, looking for the 10-month-old baby of a couple that tested positive. I've seen the pictures. They're coming and looking for the young 10-month-old child because the child is in danger because his mother, who's nursing him, has coronavirus. And when the parents don't open the door, which is a smart thing not to open the door, they then receive a package the next day with instructions for the 10-month-old child for him to follow, to isolate himself in the house, and now to be able to take care of himself by wearing a mask, and there's gloves in there, and there's, wipes, and a one kind bar, a nice granola bar. That's what they want to provide for this 10-month-old child, and it's an attitude. It's an attitude of destruction of the family, destruction of human relations, but there's more to that. The next step is, and this is all available on the governor of New Jersey's website, on his plan to reopen the economy. It's called Economic Health Through Public Health. And in the third step, after testing everyone every week and then contact tracing, there's going to be quarantining. And the quarantining is going to be removing people to free and safe government locations. This is something that a person has to recognize right now. If this doesn't bother somebody, I'm not sure exactly what sleeping pills they're taking. But the fact of the matter is that the government could come in and say, you are not able to safely quarantine Mrs. Tamar because you have only two bathrooms in your house and you have six kids and you have a certain ratio of bathrooms. The one dedicated bathroom for the person with coronavirus, you need to be removed from your house. This is Chinese-style tyranny that the public health officials in the United States are advocating. And in Israel, they're unfortunately and tragically doing this, taking people out of their families and putting them in what they call coronavirus hotels. It sounds so sweet to go and have food prepared for you. And how much better if it's kosher food? It is tyranny. This is tyranny. There's no question about this. So the trap starts with the testing. And if you get funneled into this virtual cattle car of testing, then contact tracing, then everyone around you gets affected. Now you're afraid to go visit your family members because maybe they are positive and they're going to find out 2 days later that they're positive and you're going to be isolated and now quarantined. It is a disruption of humanity and we must get off the train now.
Okay, but again, there are people who die from this, and I can just attest that my son ran out of the country right before the lockdown. He didn't want to be here, and he was going to get on a plane, and I would not want to get on a plane. I would not want him to get on a plane if somebody was showing took a test and was shown positive to carry the coronavirus. I mean, this is the safety of a plane load, a couple hundred people on the plane.
That's a rationale that is being used to justify blocking people from traveling, justify mandating masks. It's so compelling. That's why they use public health. If they came and told you can't get on the plane because you're Jewish or because you're Arab or because you believe in certain ideas, you would revolt against it. They've got you convinced that this is sufficient justification because a guy 40 rows up on the plane might have symptoms of coronavirus, that therefore it's okay to require everyone to have travel passes that indicate whether or not they meet the health standards of the government.
Okay. So then I want you to just return again to the question of what would be the motivation of the governments around the world that are instituting these lockdowns and these restrictions on us. What is their motive? If you're saying it's not really to protect us, what is their motive?
Public health is about taking control of the population. People are always looking for motivation. Where's the money? Where's the honor? Where's the political power? And those are really distractions. Those are petty. That's the fodder for petty people. Money, honor, power is petty people talk. People that are serious believe in religious ideals. And public health is the cult of scarcity. They believe there's not enough in the world. And their mission, like I referred earlier, back to the times of Nimrod and also the king of Egypt, Paro, and the Spartans and the Platonic ideas, and then the Enlightenment with the with utilitarianism, and then Nietzscheism and Nazism and communism and Marxism and all the different terms of it. It's all part of the cult of scarcity. There's not enough. Therefore, they must crush everyone in their religious zeal to be able to pull this off. We know this from the Torah, because the Torah talks about a nation of Amalek that knows God and decided because of its own egotistical reasons that it wanted to rebel against God and destroy the knowledge of God from the world and destroy the face of humanity from the world. It's so fascinating. People don't understand this, that the Nazis were not a German phenomenon. The Germans, who happened to be very efficient, organized and law and order following people, so it was easy to, even though there was a lot of German opposition to the Nazis, they were able to take public health and make it an institutionalized, extremely effective and efficient way to eliminate the lives unworthy of life, starting with sterilizing the German people.
Okay.
They did not want to have reproduced.
Okay, hold it right there. We have to go to a break again. We're going to be right back, everybody. Feel free to call in and join in. Agree, disagree, you're welcome to do so. We'll be right back. All right, we're back here at the Tamar Yonah Show on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. Our guest is Rabbi Yitzhak David Smith. He is a lawyer and has studied also molecular biology, virology, and infectious diseases. He's also an expert at constitutional law and personal rights and the U.S. Constitution. And he's here talking to us on the show about how many of the government laws that they're implementing on us right now, the demands that they're making on us, are unconstitutional and go against our inalienable rights. And Rabbi, in the last segment, I was asking you what was motivating these governments, because most of the people who are on the side of the government is doing wrong, we have to stop the lockdowns, they're mostly in the camp, I would assume, of the New World Order, and the government's trying to take away our rights because they want to make a one world government, and this is the way, you know, never let, as they say, never let a good crisis go to waste, and they're jumping on this and using the corona in order to take away our rights. But you're saying it's actually not money and power and honor, rather it's this idea of the cult of scarcity, where they are truly afraid in their own religious, and I'm not talking about, you know, churches and synagogues and things like that, but in their own spiritual path of that there is not enough to go around on this planet for everyone. But that doesn't make sense to me, and I want you to explain that, because that would mean that Benjamin Netanyahu is afraid that there's not enough, and that's why he's doing this, or he's part of the New World Order, and that's why he's doing that. Why? Explain to us.
We just finished the first Parsha, the first Torah reading in the Bible, in Torah, is Parshas Bereishis. And we see over there that when Cain and Abel, when Cain had a thought, an insecure thought, that the God was not going to turn towards him, there was not enough love from God to be shared between him and his brother, he was unable to see clearly anymore, and he was so agitated and so distressed from the insecure thought that God was not with him, that he ended up killing his brother to eliminate what he saw as the source of his pain. And this is a religious, this is a spiritual experience. Every moment and every thought we have a choice between a secure thought and an insecure thought. I can understand and know that there's God is taking care of me. I have everything I need. I'm in his loving embrace, and the rest of humanity is also. There's sometimes thoughts that come into my head. What's going to be about the mortgage? Do I have enough love? Do I have enough time? Do I have enough money? All these things, when I take those insecure thoughts seriously, then I get off track and I start taking actions to try to compensate for that insecurity. What's the source of stealing? It's because a person doesn't think they're going to make a living by doing it honestly. So there's not enough to go around. They have to steal it from someone else who earned it. Why was the first murder committed? Because someone didn't feel there was enough love from God. There was a shortage, and therefore he had to kill his competitor. This is the fundamental moment by moment choice each one of us in humanity have. And when we're in secure thoughts, we are experiencing a great abundant world. When we're not, we're in a cult of scarcity. Now, people have adopted that as their whole modus operandi. Their whole ideology is one of scarcity. Now, they use power, money, and prestige to recruit the opportunists. There's two types of people over here. There's the ideologues, who I really believe in public health and the control of the world population as a religious objective and reducing the world's population. Then you have the people who are just opportunists. The people that you mention as politicians, those are just the opportunists. They might want the power, the prestige, and the money. And we see they often get embroiled in scandals because they overextend their desire for that. But they're just opportunists following whatever they are told is the agenda for today. We have Agenda 21, Agenda 30. We have the Club of Rome saying the world population needs to be reduced. We have the UN sustainability agenda. And if that's how they will get ahead, they will do it. So the current leadership in the government of Israel is 100% committed to following through on this public health agenda. We could see that they are the most aggressive, most ahead of the curve, mostly because they're taking advantage of the fact that the Jewish people in Israel trust the Israeli government and can't imagine that it would have other motivations. But we see that it's no different than what's going on in Australia. The brutality of the police against the population is the same as in Australia and New Zealand and other countries and and in England, it's got nothing to do with what we thought they believed. It has to do with what they're actually doing right now. And this is how the population gets mobilized and gets moved through fear, through control of thinking. And I want to, you mentioned that there were people in Germany on this call. I want to give a shout out to the people in Germany because they are showing tremendous resistance to these orders because they remember either from their own experiences or from their parents telling them what fascism, what National Socialism was like in Germany. And it was a complete repression of the ability of the German people to think, a complete moment-by-moment control of their lives. They had to pledge allegiance at every minute to the party ideology. And this is what they recognize, and that's why they're standing up, so having million people map marches against this, because they recognize this. They've lived through it. We in the United States, it's true that many of our brave soldiers fought against the Nazis, but at the end of the day, we have never experienced tyranny in the United States. We can't imagine it is possible, but the Germans know what it's like. They know what it's like. So we have to see that there's something, it's an ideological battle over here. It's a spiritual battle. Do you go with a God of abundance, or are you, not God forbid you, but each one of us has our moments when we see shortage and we fear. Are we going to subscribe to the cult of scarcity? And in that fear, once that fear takes over, there is no limit what a human being can do. There's only two boys in the world, and one killed the other because of his fear that there was not enough attention from God. That is what the cult of scarcity is, and it will destroy anything and everybody without any limitations whatsoever.
Okay, so let me go back again to the idea that if indeed, you're, as you claim, this is a cult of scarcity, then again, why wouldn't the governments just let these people die like in Sweden? They just let the, they said it's going to be herd immunity. Whoever survives, survives. Whoever, you know, we're all going to get it anyway. So let's just get it over with and not destroy the economy. And when you destroy the economy, you have even less. I mean, even Netanyahu was telling the people, don't make a rush on the grocery stores. We're going to have enough. Don't worry. But when people are not working in the fields, a few months later we'll feel it. We're not going to have tomatoes maybe, or we're maybe not going to have other things on the shelves that we would have had because we're under lockdown. So that doesn't really make sense to me so much. And again, if they want to eliminate a lot of the population, they can just say, look, we're really sorry. The hospitals can't handle it. It's up to you guys to take care of yourselves. It's not our responsibility. And then people will do what they want, and a lot of people will get sick, and a lot of people will die.
You're looking for a logical reason when this is a religious fervor. The answer is you always have to look where the control is. What way can they get the greatest control? If they just let everyone, like you're saying, let everyone die, or not everyone, of course, the few people that would die from this coronavirus, a very small percentage of the population, and they just let it be, they would have no benefit in control. The idea here is first of all, I'm suggesting that a large part of the people that died in the United States, especially the elderly in the nursing homes, they were cruelly eliminated. Now, in addition to that, the control that they're going to have now over people's reproductive cycles, over people's health, is so much greater in their ability to control the population. It's not a temporary, if you're gonna try to give statistics that they could have killed more people now as opposed to the way they did it, which I don't think that would have happened. If they had not forced the sick people into the nursing homes, if they had not forced the people into the hospitals and then eliminated them there, there would have been a lot fewer people dying anyways, and there would be a lot fewer people dying now. What they've done is they're looking for always the measure of control. Where can they have the control over the health system, control over people's lives? That's always the litmus test, and that's what you got to look for. And I want to just address your point. You said, you know, you brought the humorous example, the judge and the one opinion and another opinion, and then the wife says, but how could they both be right? You're right too. We have to make decisions in life, and we have to have principles of making a decision. I'd like to suggest that when you don't know enough to be able to understand the science and the medicine or even the Torah, the Jewish law perspective of this, when someone's coming to you with fear to justify limiting your life, you know that it's false. That's a basic principle. When someone's coming and threatening you that you must do this and the only way out of this terrible situation is to do with the door that they're pointing you to, That's a bully who's bullying you, and it's always the right thing to do the opposite of what they're saying. These are fundamental principles of human life and of survival.
You don't think there's exceptions? I mean, like, people who have leprosy. People of leprosy, they're separated from people because it is so contagious, and it is a terrible thing. And that's not even, you don't even die from leprosy immediately. It's something, you know, you can live for years and years with leprosy, and yet they are put under in quarantine, and they're sent to their own hotels, you know, to live in.
So the nuns that took care of the lepers did not get sick. So there's a lot more going on over there than meets the eye. This idea that somehow these diseases are so contagious that everyone who comes in contact with people will die is just not true, even with leprosy. So we have to remember that when we're being, our fear strings are being pulled, someone's trying to take advantage of us. Someone's trying to create a crisis and take advantage of that. That's how they got the rabbis to close the synagogues here in New Jersey. They came to them and said there's going to be not enough ventilators. There's a shortage. The rabbi says, okay, we'll close the hospitals. Sorry, we'll close the synagogues, we'll close the schools in case they're going to run out of ventilators. As it turns out, the ventilators were the wrong treatment anyways. So they never ran out of the ventilators. It was a fear technique using shortage. So I'm just saying, as a general principle, I can't be there to answer everyone's questions for the rest of the time.
Okay.
What everyone has to have is the basic skills.
We got to go to a break. We got to go to a break. But I did have to say that the percentage of people, of religious Jews, getting corona because the synagogues are open are much higher. We'll be right back. All right, this is our last segment. We're speaking with Rabbi Yitzhak David Smith. He is our guest, and he's talking to us about the lockdowns and all of the other things that the government is putting upon its populations around the world in order to say that they're protecting us. We're the government and we're here to help. Basically, that's what it is. But I'm arguing the other side as well, because there is another side, and you can agree or disagree, and I've opened up the airways here for you to be able to join us on the air. But I have to say this again before we go away from the show, that all of you, before making your decisions from any information that you hear here or dialogue, to ask your own health practitioner, your own medical doctor, even perhaps your lawyer, about how to behave during this pandemic, because whether you like the rules or not, those are the rules, and you can get arrested, you can get fined, there are consequences of not listening. So you must understand. You must understand that. And I am a good girl. I'm listening to all of the things to do, but it's because I am worried about getting it. I also see that our rights are being taken away. And Rabbi, in the last segment, we were talking about how people can't go to synagogue, can't go to church or their place of worship in order to go. But I have to tell you, you know, in my neighborhood where I live in the Jerusalem area, people are praying outside in a minyan in a quorum of 10 men with the 2 meters of social distancing. They're able to pray. No one's telling them that you can't pray. They're just saying that you can't do it in a building and you have to have social distancing, etc. What is wrong with that when we are, whether we like it or not, in the middle of a pandemic?
Well, you keep saying we're in the middle of a pandemic. It's a scare. People are being scared into thinking that there's something very, very deadly to their health. There's mostly people davening, praying with a quorum, are not in danger. Even the older people, the 80 and 90 year old people, I would suggest that their health is better served by coming to pray than it is by sitting at home afraid. But here's the key point. You see, we think that religious services and getting together is about this experience of our prayer and connection with God. And that is missing the point. The whole point, we come together as a quorum, we come together on the Sabbath, we come together on the holidays and every day, is because we human beings are meant to interact with each other. The prophet says, my house is a prayer for all the nations. The holy temple is a house of prayer for all the nations in the world. Everyone's going to come together to pray in the holy temple. It is in a social experience. We are meant to sit down after the prayer services and sit close to each other and share and encourage each other. We're meant to go to each other's weddings because the guests need the happiness of the wedding as much as the bride and groom need it. We are meant to go support each other at a funeral and a time of loss. In the Shivat experience, we're meant to go be together. That is how Hashem, God, created the human being. And when the non-Jews get together for a football game, it's just as important that they get together for a barbecue, even though we might say, okay, it's loftier to sit together in a synagogue and pray to God. But the fact of the matter is they're fulfilling, by getting together for a barbecue, they are fulfilling a fundamental human precept of getting together as human beings to enjoy each other's company. There, no one has the right to take that away from anybody else. So we need to get back to basics and understand it's not just about religious freedoms here. It's about human ability to live, and being in connection with somebody else is extremely, extremely important. And I wanted to mention to you, you mentioned about the fines and following the rules. I think it's very important you should be aware of what the fines are, but I don't think that the fines or any threats should deter a person from doing what's right, because a person's ability to maintain the free exercise of their rights is directly proportionate to their willingness to endure the violence of the people who want to take away their freedom. You have to be willing to endure the fines, and if the police officer will beat a person or arrest them for doing what's right, then that is, I'm not saying that that should be, that's a terrible thing, but you have to be willing to do that. And we see that all the great moments in history come from people who are willing to endure the threats, the violence, and even threaten annihilation from those that sought to take away their freedoms. We see from this book of Esther, Mordechai was one man who did not bow to Haman, and the other Jews all bowed, and they even accused Mordechai of endangering the Jewish people and bringing the destruction upon them. But that did not stop him from doing what was right. So the key here is to remember that we must be willing to endure the threats of those that seek to rule over us as every human being. And if I may, I'd like to take that to the next level, to recognize that all of humanity is in the same boat over here. We, in Israel, we have a program that's Israel Talk Radio over here. We have many, many Arabs, Bedouin and Druze that live also in the land of Israel. And they are under the same threat. They are under the same threat of violence and fines as the Jewish people. And the Arab weddings annoy the Israeli government just as much as the Jewish weddings. And that we must recognize that there's a common thread of the human spirit and the search for truth and the recognition of our right to live as good, upright, free human beings runs through all people. I was watching a video of a man in Tel Aviv who was not religious by any external means. He was not dressed religious. He didn't use religious terminology. And he was speaking with confidence and truth against what the Israeli government is doing and exposing the false statistics and so forth. And I was watching that and I was saying, here I am. I'm a religious rabbi. Who do I have more in common with? This man on the streets of Tel Aviv or a rabbi who is all doing everything superficially correct, but is full of fear and recommending that everyone give up Jewish practice in order to be able to comply with the government? Who do we have more in common with? The Arab people who are seeking to live as free, upright people and want to be able to be free of tyranny also, or someone else who's running around turning in their neighbors and advocating, as one rabbi tragically did, advocating that the police should be beating up the Jews who want to pray. So
who want to pray in a synagogue, in a closed building with a lot of people.
And that's right.
There's a difference.
Synagogue is, but no, there's no difference, because God Almighty commanded us to build a temple for him called the Temple in Jerusalem, which was originally a traveling tabernacle and became a building. And we're supposed to go in there. We're supposed to be in these temples, that these synagogues that we are creating to honor God Almighty. And we're supposed to come together in those. And no one has the permission to dismiss the importance of those things. I want to just suggest to all the listeners that the supporting each other, recognizing that actually the people who are living in the territories in Israel, what they call the territories, but really part of the land of Israel, they've got Arab neighbors. You've got Arab neighbors in Umm al-Fahm and other neighborhoods and Shafram and so forth that are being repressed by the same public health tyranny. Reach out to your neighbors, talk to them, realize that everyone is on the same side over here. We need to get access to food. We need to get access to safety and security that's not dependent on the government. We need to protect our children from being impinged by this, by the testing and later on vaccines. This is really, we need to all work together because, like I said before, when we all are willing to say no to the tyranny, we will all be free.
Okay. Well, I have to tell you that there's no lack of access to food here. In fact, we've all gained weight since the coronavirus. I myself can attest to that. But I want to say here, you know, there's the, I want to argue with you that our rights are lessened, that our rights have been taken away. I will not argue with that. It is true. However, there is the issue that we've always been taught as well. Sometimes you don't want to be right. You just want to be smart. And we have a, again, the statistics of Hasidic Jews, religious Jews who have gotten the virus and have died from it is much higher in the religious communities where people continue to go to the synagogue in closed quarters to pray, where they're holding hands and dancing together instead of keeping social distance. And I'm not saying that, you know, everybody has to not do that. I wouldn't do it. And I think, as you say, everyone has to take personal responsibility. However, this is a virus that doesn't listen to law, doesn't listen to constitutions, doesn't care about it. It goes from person to person extremely easily, and it is killing people. And we've seen the statistics. For whatever reason, I don't think that the hospitals are killing everybody. There may have been some people that you're right. They you know, don't feed them. They don't have a chance anyway. Let them go. We got to free up a bed, whatever it is. But I still think that this is a deadly disease, not as deadly as other flus, but it still is killing people. It is damaging people who have survived it. Some people have survived it with nothing. And again, I agree with you that we have to take personal responsibility, but again, be smart, don't be right. That's just what I have to say. Anybody who wants to agree, disagree, they can write in. I will send all of your emails to our guest so he can respond if he likes. And I want to give out his website again for anybody who'd like to go there and learn more and not just hear me. SaveOurFreedoms.org. SaveOurFreedoms.org. And we'll actually link to that website where this show is podcasted on that page. So you can go there yourself, get the information, read his article, watch his videos. There's a lot of value to it, a lot to think about. And I want to thank you, Rabbi Yitzhak David Smith, for coming on the show.
I want to thank you so much for taking the time for this. And I just want to remind everybody that the danger of an all-powerful government far exceeds the danger of any virus, no matter how dangerous it is, even in reality. If it was really as dangerous or even more dangerous than they're saying it is, an all-powerful government is much more dangerous. And the world is really looking for the Jewish people to take leadership over here. When we stand up and say what's right, when we show what God's creations look like with dignity, and we do not hide ourselves and we do not stay apart from each other, and we walk without fear and with pride as good human beings and help each other, that's redemption to the world.
All right. Well, you've heard two sides here to the story. You can agree, disagree. Again, go to your medical professional and your law professional and get your answers from them and make your own decisions. This is my opinion I gave on the show, and you're all welcome to write in. Again, I will forward any emails to our guests. Thank you, everybody, for being with us, and thank you, Rabbi Yitzhak David Smith.